Some of them I had knocked down that it was caused by fear. He said, no, that ain't right. This is plain damn dishonesty. He helped me see those things within me that I could not see. He helped me see that sex really wasn't my problem at all. I used to think I was oversexed. I wasn't oversexed. I was undersecure, and I used sex to build my ego. Another human being helped me see that. And I think that's what we're really after in step five. Of course, confession is good for the soul. We all know that. But that isn't really what step five is about. Step five is to learn all I can about me so I will know what I need to change in the future so I can live and be peaceful and happy and free. You know?
Page 74. Right? And naturally, we think well before we choose the person with whom we're going to take this intimate and confidential step. In this page, you know, we're getting into how to, you know, get somebody to take step five with. Well, that's really, we don't see that as a problem today because we have a lot of people who are knowledgeable and sponsors who are around in Alcoholics Anonymous. But still, we today is going through this, the better we are familiar with the inventory and the process of the inventory, the better we can help the next person, you know, go through this. And it's easy, and if we know how to work the inventory, step five is real easy to do. To look at column four and to analyze each of these resentments, each fear, and each harm done is done to other person. Look at it from an outside viewpoint and help this individual get to the exact nature of the problem. As Charlie said, the point here in step five is to improve on the information in the inventory. This is why five comes after four. You know, it's an improvement or refinement of the information.
And you all doing step four the way the big book says to do it, you're going to be the step fivers of the future.
Yeah.
You're going to be the ones that people can come to for step five because you'll know what they're trying to do. And you're going to be able to help them in this area.
Yeah. Now I love the way the book, if we can look at this, remember, this book was unchanged since 1939 when it was published. We haven't changed the book. Now, in 1939, when this book was first come to Dallas and to Denton or where New York or wherever a new person got the book, it didn't say go to your sponsor because there wasn't any sponsors there. And this book had to be complete. And so this book at this point is telling them who you can get to do this with. The new reader, the brand new person that purchased the book, the first alcoholics. And this page is still unchanged. And I kind of look at it in the kind of what they really faced in finding somebody. Those of us belonging to religious domination, which requires confession, of course, we want to go to the proper point of authority whose duty is to receive it. You know, they can go, those people could do that and they can still do it. Though we have no religious connections, we may still do well to talk to someone in ordained religion. You know, the people that were not in that particular religion or in a religion, they could still use this. We often find people quick to see and understand our problems. Of course, we sometimes encounter people who do not understand. Now, if you don't want to do that, it said, if we cannot or would rather not, we search out an acquaintance or a close-mouth understanding friend. Now, can you imagine having to take step five with a friend? Huh? Somebody at work? Well, this maybe, you know, he was giving them suggestions. Perhaps a doctor or a psychologist will be the person. They gave him that point. Now I think he runs out of suggestions, really, because of he said, maybe one of your own family. But, you know, it really got tough, you know. But really, this is what he was doing. But we don't have that problem because we have sponsors, and we say we hope people are getting better and better at doing this. Now, on page 75, we get into the doing of step five. He told us why we need to do it. Now he's going to tell us how to do it. When we decided who was to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory. We are prepared for a long talk. We explained our partner what we're about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we're engaging on a life and death errand. Most of people approaching this way will be glad to help. They're honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step and holding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect ease, peace and ease. Our fears fall from us and we begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling to drink prominently disappear will often come strongly. We'll feel we're on a broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. And as we said, you know, after we complete this step, we can look at the results, and it's the first major results after step five of all the steps. We get more out of step five than any step we've taken. As I said, we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. Or at step two, we disbelieve. And the spiritual experience begins after step five, not after step three. It begins after we put something in some action into the program. And the real results begin to take place after this step. Now, after we have finished and gotten this result, then it says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. And I love this section of the book. It's the only place where you have a rest stop. People say, how long, you know, do you have? When do you work this step? He said, we get a little rest here, but not very much.
He said 1 hour. He didn't say 28 days. 1 hour.
1 hour.
All the others he said at once, but here he gives us an hour's rest.
Carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart to know Him better. We don't know God, but we know Him better. Taking the book down from the shelf, we turn the pages which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we admitted anything for a building arch to which we should walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement to put in the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? And again, we see him referring to his little reference again. You know, very subtly, he's built painting this picture. Remember, he says, willingness to change was a foundation, and that's the first step. He says, believing was a cornerstone. He says, step three was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. And now he's added two other stones, you know, steps four and five. And he said, we will review our little project. We will review this, and this is the personality change. If we're getting that results, then those things are properly in place. And if they are, and we can answer to our satisfaction, then he said, we look at step six.
I sat there a while ago thinking and wondering what other people would really think of us if they would see us in some of our situations. We were sitting there a while ago with all these lights out and a room full of smoke. And some people walked in doors on both sides, and here's two guys sitting up here on Sunday morning talking about sex. If those people would have been outsiders, they'd have wondered what in the hell is going on in this place. We were doing one of these big book studies down in Florida, and two little women that had looked in the back door. And some other people heard the two little women talking about what's going on there, and they said, who are those people in there? One said to the other. And she said, well, they must be, it said, I think they're AA people. And the other said, well, what did they do? And that one said, I don't know, but said, that black guy sure does draw funny pictures on the board. Joe was drawing that disease concept thing on the board at that time. Page 76. If we can answer our satisfaction, we then look at step six. We emphasize willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. Now, step six has one little paragraph in the big book, and that's all. And if you'll notice in this paragraph, it didn't say anything at all about defects of character. Now, step six does say we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. But it doesn't say that in the narrative in the book. It says, are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things we have admitted are objectionable? Now, surely the old selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, inconsiderate personality that we have uncovered, surely that ought to be objectionable to us now. That shows that those are the things that cause us to do the things that create the resentments and the fears and the harms to other people. And if we want any peace of mind in the future, then we're going to need to change that old personality. Now, are we ready to let God take that away? And the book says if we're not willing, we ask God to help us be willing. The book recognizes that self cannot overcome self. That in many cases, in most cases, we're going to have God's help to overcome these things. And many of us, when we get to this area of the book, we find that we don't really want to get rid of those things. You know, when I started working on this, I was 40 years old. And I'd spent a lifetime being selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate. And frankly, I didn't know what life would be without that. Now, people kept saying, Charlie, it'll be better. But I didn't know that. I knew what it was when I ran the show. But I didn't know what it would be if those things disappeared. Because you see, I didn't know that God does not allow vacuums in the personality or voids. I didn't know that if those things disappeared, that they would have to be replaced with the opposite of those things. That if selfishness began to disappear, I didn't know that would be replaced with unselfishness. If dishonesty began to disappear, I didn't know that that would be replaced with honesty. I was afraid that if these things were taken away from me, that I wouldn't have any personality at all. And that was just about true. And then also, I think we've got to face the fact that some of those things are fun. Some of those things we do are quite enjoyable in one way. And we don't know what life will be without them. And the book says if we aren't ready, we ask God to help us be willing to be willing. And as we become willing to get rid of these things, we ask God to take them away. Now, that's all there is. In step 7, it says, when ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I'm now willing that you shall have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. Now, step 7 doesn't say defects of character. But this paragraph dealing with step 7 did say that. Step 7 says shortcomings. So you see what he's really done to us with these words. He just used them any way he wants to. In fact, I became so interested in step 7 in the word shortcomings that I began to look through the book to find out how many times he mentioned it. The only place I can find it is in step 7 and how it works. Everywhere else, he called it a defect. He called it a fault, a mistake, a wrong, a flaw. I went to the 12 and 12 to see what he did with shortcomings. Step 7 and the 12 and 12, he doesn't even mention shortcomings until the last paragraph. Everywhere else, he called it defects. So it's plain that Bill did not differentiate between these. These were the things we find in 4. We talk about them to another human being in 5. We become willing to get rid of them in 6, and we ask God to take them away in 7. Many people seem to believe that when we ask God to take these away, that all we have to do is stand there, and then God will suddenly make us just as pure as the driven snow. And I don't believe that's going to happen either. I don't believe God will do for us what we can do for ourselves. We can't get rid of those by ourselves, but we can, through the force of our will and God's power, try to become the opposite. My mind is nothing more than a set of mental habits that have been ingrained in my mind throughout my entire lifetime. And if I want to get rid of the old habit of selfishness, then chances are I'm going to have to start trying to practice unselfishness. And slowly, as God takes selfishness away, and as I try to practice unselfishness, my mind changes from a selfish to an unselfish thing. Dishonesty is a habit of mine. And if I want to get rid of dishonesty, I'm probably going to have to start trying to be honest. And God, that's hard for me to do. But with God's help and power, when I feel dishonesty, I can always stop and say, Charlie, we're trying to be honest, and I can start practicing honesty. And slowly over a period of time, the old thought patterns begin to die, and the new thought patterns begin to take their place. Successful living is daily dying. And as the old thoughts die, as I don't feed power to the old thoughts, they die out, and then they are replaced by the opposite. And I become an entirely different human being. I think I understand now what the book says when it says we were reborn, not in the physical, but in the mind. We changed into completely new personalities based upon what we used to be. I think I also understand what the book says when it says some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. As long as I try to hold on to the old way of thinking, I can't change my way of thinking. But I become willing to turn it loose. With God's help and power, I practice the opposite, and slowly, over a period of time, I do change into a different human being. You know?
As Silas said, I think we see it more and more in that, learning more and more about, you know, what 6 and 7 is all about. 6 and 7 to me is really the real pinnacle of change. They are the tools of change that we've been given as a result of the first 5 steps. The first 5 steps give you the tools to change, which are 6 and 7. And they're very difficult tools to use, but they're very powerful. Change is given in our hands, put in our hands. And these are our steps. And as we were talking earlier before the meeting, we all here like to say, you know, remember, people get to this part of the program, they get to 6 and 7, they work all the other steps, and then they say, okay, God, I'm ready. You know, give me the $29.95 special, you know. Just fix me. And if you go back, and we always say, if you go back to the first, he says, these are the steps that we have taken. These are our steps. These are not the steps that God has taken. God don't need these steps. These are, we take these steps. We get to 6 and 7 and give them to God, you know. Now, 6 is very simple. They are twos. Beautiful. And I think we're blessed to have it, and people don't know what they got if they have worked these other things. They don't know the value of what we have. Most people out there, and I think that we're blessed people being alcoholics, because one of the only diseases that is one of the only major illnesses, you know, that an individual can have, that he can get well and be better than he was before he got sick. And all these other people are kind of locked in out there, that whatever they are, they don't have the tools to change. You know what I mean? But 6 and 7 are tools to change. Two powerful tools. Now look at these tools as very difficult tools, and they're hard to apply. But still yet, you know, we have them. And it's sort of like I go to the hardware store and I buy a lot of tools and I work around the place. And most tools you buy, if you go there and buy some tools, about every tool you have, and there'll be some instructions on how to use it. But there's not a lot of information in the book on these tools. And I liken that these tools is like a pick and a shovel. They're hard to use. And I've never bought a pick and a shovel that had instructions on them. You know, they don't give you. You're supposed to know what you're doing when you get them. And step 6 is real simple, but it's hard. How do we change? Step 6 is not doing what you want to do. It's simple, but it's hard. And step 7 is making yourself do what you don't want to do. And you will change exactly as you apply those two. And no more. Nothing else is going to happen. No magic to it. Just work. And we get well the same way we got sick. We worked at it.
We were born spiritually fit.
Yeah.
We had to work to get spiritually fit.
We worked at getting sick, you know. We worked at this, you know. Now we just work the other way, the opposite, you know. That's the way you change, working against yourself. Well, if you keep letting actions, as Charlie said, to these old thoughts, they will always grow in your mind. But if you quit lending actions to those thoughts and don't act them out and don't lend actions to them, they'll die in your mind, you know, through lack of inactivity. And the new thoughts will take their place. And as he said, our old ideas will be cast to one side, and a new set of motives begin to dominate our mind. And we said this principle is just like any other principle, that we can take one principle in one place that we understand and look and apply that to our personalities. And one thing that I always like to, I look at losing weight. Everybody's into losing weight today. That's the big thing. We can look at that. They want to change their bodies. We want to change our personalities. Well, there's a principle there. You know, they say on TV, on TV you can eat anything you want to eat, and on this particular program, if you send in and get this plan and send us some money, you know, you can eat anything you want to eat and lose weight. Well, you'll lose some money, but you won't lose much weight. Now, the way you lose weight is real simple. I mean, you don't have to send off money to find that out. There's some tools to it. The way you lose weight is you don't eat what you want to eat, and you make yourself eat what you don't want to eat, and you will lose weight accordingly. You know what I mean? And they tell, you know, and after we quit lending ideas to these old actions, they will die, and a new thing will dominate, be the thing that we use. It will become our way of life. And, you know, they tell me the same way a woman was telling me about losing weight. She said, you know, you make yourself eat what you don't want to eat, and after a period of time, you begin to like that. That's the same way with our personalities. And we can change and change and change for the rest of our lives. But as Charlie said, that change is based, as Paul in the Bible, he talked about it. He said, same old principle. He said, successful living was daily dying. Then we got to die somewhere over here so we can live somewhere else. But I think, you know, the great difficulties that are that we could change and change and change with these tools for the rest of our lives until we're, you know, our lives could become unbelievable. Where some of the people that used to know us wouldn't know us. We could grow beyond our imagination with these tools, but we probably won't. Most of us are in love with what we are, and we're not willing to die so that we can live. But these are the two. 6 and 7 are the results of the... Not, you can't just do these, but... These first 5 steps give us these tools to change, and it's based on how we apply them, how we work them every day on a daily basis. You know, we the ones that can fashion our lives. I think we're very blessed as people to have these tools to change.
I've been eating spinach for 6 years, and I still don't like it as well as I do chocolate cake. Hopefully I will someday. The day I should, I haven't. Middle of the page, page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we've harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. Now, the old selfish personality created lots of problems for other people and also for me. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Now, nobody really wants to make amends. And the book recognizes this is going to be difficult to do. So again, it sees that self cannot overcome self. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Step 8 says we made a list of all people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And some of them we're going to have difficulty in being willing to make amends. And there again, we're going to have to turn to this God as we understand him for the strength and the power to do this. And many people question this and they say, well, why do I have to go make those amends? Well, remember, we're trying to get peace of mind, serenity and happiness, and sobriety at the same time. The harms that we have done to other people will always be with us, and it will usually evidence itself in our mind as shame, fear, guilt, and remorse. God does dwell within each of us. And we do something that's wrong and hurt other people, we know that. And even if they don't catch us at it, we're going to feel guilty about that. We're going to have remorse associated with that. And certainly we're going to have fear associated with it. What are they going to do if they find out? But what are they going to do the next time I see them? What are they going to say and how am I going to answer? And those kind of feelings in the mind effectively block us off from God's will. And in order to get the full peace of mind, serenity, and happiness that we need to straighten out our relationship with other people. All people are tri-dimensional creatures. The book's referred to that two or three times already. It's talked about the spiritual sickness. It's talked about the mental illness. And it's talked about the physical illness. And when it talks about the physical, it doesn't mean just our physical body. It means our relationship with everything in the physical world as we know it. Other people, our job, our spouse, our children, our car, everything that's material. And if we can't get right in all three areas, then we can't be well human beings. And you and I really don't have any choice. You know, we do, God does exist. And our book says He does dwell within each human being. And if that's true, and I'm sure it is, then the only question is, am I going to exist with that God in harmony or disharmony? And I always existed with Him in disharmony. Now, steps 1, 2, and 3 got me right with God. Set up the proper relationship with God, letting Him be the director and me be the follower. So I'm well in that dimension of life. Steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 got me right in my head. I looked at me, and I looked at my problems, and I looked at my character defects, and I begin to work on them in 6 and 7, and I get right in my mind. Now, I've got a head, and whether I like it or not is beside the point. The mind is there. And the only question is, do I live within harmony or disharmony? 4, 5, 6, and 7, I can now live with my mind in harmony. Now, whether I like it or not, there are other people in this world. And the only question is, do I live with them in harmony or disharmony? Always I've lived with them in disharmony. Now, if I'll use 8 and 9, I can become in harmony with other people. And when I do that, I am right in all three dimensions of life. And for the first time since I've been a little baby, I am a well, whole, rounded human being. So the steps are not anything new. You know, they are a process where we become well in all three dimensions of life. So whether I like 8 and 9 or not is beside the point. If I don't get my relationship straightened out with people, then that's going to back up in my head. And I'm going to get screwed up in my mind. And if I get screwed up in mind, then that's going to back up in the spirit and block me off from God's will. And blocked off from God's will, insanity returns and I drink again. So I really don't have any choice. Dr. Bob tried to get sober without doing this. And Dr. Bob didn't get sober. And the last day he drank, Bill gave him a bottle of beer in the parking lot at a hospital when he was going to go do surgery. And Dr. Bob left that hospital after the surgery, and he disappeared. And Bill just knew that beer had triggered the allergy, and he was off and running again. And Bill went back to his house and waited for Dr. Bob. And eventually Dr. Bob showed up late that afternoon. And Bill said, "Where in the hell have you been?" And he said, "I've been going up and down both sides of the street making my amends to other people." And Dr. Bob never took another drink after that. It seems to be, to get the peace of mind we really need, this is an area that we have to work on. So 8 tells me who I'm going to have to make these amends to. To all such people. Wherever I can do that. 9 tells me then the kind of amends to make. 9 says we made direct amends to such people wherever possible. And I think direct amends means 2 things. 1, face-to-face, one-on-one. It gives me an example on page 77 and 78 on how to go to the person that I hated and make amends to that person directly, one-on-one. In the middle of the second paragraph, it says the question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we've done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we're still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Under no condition do we criticize such a person who argue. Simply we tell him that we'll never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street. Realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we'll be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we're calling upon admits his own faults, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. This happened with me and the fellow that I hated so bad. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemy sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally they'll offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We've made our demonstration, done our part, it's water over the dam. Direct amends, face to face, one-on-one. Now, that's pretty easy to do with people we love, and if they love us. But sometimes it's damn hard to do with those suckers that we don't like, and we don't think they like us. But to get the freedom from that thing in our head, if we'll go face to face, one-on-one, wherever we can do that, then we know from that day on that we've done the best we can do in order to make that amend. And there's never any question in our mind about how it was received. There's never any question of whether we've done our utmost. Now, even if they don't accept it, our guilt should still leave us because we have done the absolute best we can when we go to them face to face, one-on-one. And if they don't like it, then that becomes their problem. We've done all we can to straighten that thing out. I think also a direct amend deals with money. Now, a direct amend in the area of money is equal restitutions. If I stole $400 from you during my drinking, and I come to you and I say, I'm sorry, but back when I was drinking, I stole $400 from you and I'm sorry, will you forgive me? Chances are you're going to say, I'm sorry too, where in the hell is my $400? In order for me to get free of that guilt and remorse, I need to pay you your $400. Now, sometimes we say, oh, I can't do that. That's too much money. And sometimes it involves thousands and thousands of dollars, and we say that would be impossible to do. But if it was possible to steal it, then surely it's possible to pay it back. I think we also forget from step 3 on, God's been with us. And if we're to do these things, God will make it possible for us to do them. I have a friend that's been sober over 30 years now, and when he was 29 years sober, he said to me one day, he said, Charlie, I paid the last of them suckers off you last week. And I said, Dan, how do you feel? And Dan said, I feel 10 foot tall. He said, it's the first time in my life I can ever remember not owing somebody something for what I've stolen from them in the past. And he said, I feel good. And it took old Dan 29 years to do it. But he did it. Our book gives us an example. On page 78, it says, most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we're trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached it this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go, for we're liable to drink if we're afraid to face them. Now, what you and I really like to do in the case of this money, we would like to get it all together in one sack and take it in and lay it on the table and say, there's your damn money. Now, that's the way we are. But let's face it, most of us aren't going to be able to do that. But we can pay them $10 a week. Or we can pay them $20 a month. or we can arrange the best deal we can and then stick to it until we get that money paid back. And the day we pay it back, then we're going to feel good about ourselves. Now, I think one of the persons we owe an amend to more than anybody else is ourselves. Now, I don't go with the theory that I didn't hurt other people with my drinking, but I hurt a hell of a lot of people, but it hurt me too. And one of the things that's always torn me up is that guilt and that remorse and that fear. And the only way I can get rid of that is to make equal restitution. And when the restitution is made, then the guilt and fear and remorse is gone. And that's the best amend I can make to me, is to free my mind from those things of the past. My book tells me also when not to make amends. It says we may direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I've got to be careful. Some of the amends that I would like to make may hurt that person even further than they've already been hurt. Or just as importantly, it may hurt somebody else. And my book tells me to look out in the area of criminal offenses, to be careful before I do anything, to make sure it's not going to hurt another human being. It says in the area of domestic problems, said some of us have sex outside of marriage, you know, and tend to create harm for people. And it says in these areas, be careful. Make sure we're not going to hurt that person or another person before we start making amends. We have no right to try to eliminate our guilt if it's going to hurt another human being. But if we can say to ourselves, we would make that amend if we could, then we should be free from this thing. I have two or three amends to make yet that I would love to make, but I simply cannot do it. Because I know if I do it, I'm going to hurt that person, or just as importantly, I'm going to hurt another person. But the day I can successfully make it without harming them, I'm ready to do it. And if God wants it done, then He'll arrange that day. Until that time, I'll hold myself in readiness, but no guilt associated with it, because I'm ready to make it if I can make it. And by this process, we can remove all fear, all guilt, and all remorse associated with the past. When we do that, then we're going to be well in all three dimensions of life. Joe?
As Charlie said, I think, if we study these steps, because we don't go into these in depth and we get to this point in the study, I love this section of the book. Every detail is there. It's precise, and everything that we need to do to make these steps, do these steps. I've never seen a problem with this that, we couldn't be found in the big book. Because the big book deals with these three areas extensively. I think that when we look at these things, we'll finish the first nine steps with did 1, 2, and 3, which dealt with our spiritual lives. 4, 5, 6, and 7 were related to the mind. And 8 and 9 dealt with our relationships with other people. So in this, after the completion of these steps, we'll have all three areas of life we have worked on. And this brings us to the promises in the book. Well, this is where we will be if we have completed these steps as they laid out. And
remember, in the beginning, we promised you that if you would believe, which we did in step 2, if you would decide, which we did in step 3, if you would act, which we did in 4 through 9, then you could expect certain results, just like Columbus did.
Yeah.
Okay, now we have the results on page 83 and 84. These are the results of the action that we have taken to carry out the decision that we made when we took step 3.
Okay. This brings us to the promises. It says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we see that our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We'll intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Are these exaggerated promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, and this is a spiritual experience. Sometimes slowly, this is a spiritual awakening. They will always materialize if we work for them. If we work the steps, this will materialize suddenly in some rare cases, but in most cases, over a period of months, we will find that this will take place as a result of these steps.
Remember, how many of you are old enough to remember back in the days when you used to go to the movie on Saturday afternoon and see the old serial movies? Huh. Anybody in here remember that? Yeah, I'm asking for real honesty now. If you didn't go to that movie on Saturday afternoon, no sense in going to Sunday school on Sunday morning because you don't have a damn thing to talk about. So. And always on Saturday morning, I would get up and I'd say, "Mama, am I going to get to go to the movie this afternoon?" And she'd say, "Yes, son, I'm going to let you go to the movie after." And then she would outline a whole series of steps that I would have to take. After you mow the grass, after you help me with the dishes, after you paint on the garage, and always after I had done those things, and Mother would give me 25 cents. And I'd go to the movie, and it cost me a dime to get in the movie, cost me a nickel for a bag of popcorn, cost me a nickel for a candy bar, and the greatest thing was 5 cents for an RC Cola. And my God, I had a great afternoon. You see, promises always materialize after we work for them. And the same thing's true here. Now, people are saying today you can come to AA long enough and sit around and you'll soak it up by osmosis and you'll be all right. That is a lie. That isn't true. The book says you may have these if you work for them. Some people will even tell you that if you just come to 90 meetings in 90 days, everything will be okay. And that isn't right. Now, I've got nothing wrong with 90 meetings in 90 days. I think it's a great thing. But we cannot let ourselves believe that that will bring about recovery from alcoholism. We will need to work. Now, surely if we've experienced these promises, if you look at them, none of them deals with the body. They all deal with the mind. They all deal with a new attitude and outlook upon life. Surely, if we've experienced these promises, then we have had an entire personality change. Surely, we have recovered from the disease of alcoholism right here. Surely, we got peace of mind, serenity, and happiness. And we don't need to go drink alcohol to change the way that we feel. Let me read them to you once more for two reasons. Number one, I love the way I read them. But the real reason is this. I'm going to add some words to them. And the words I want to add is, whenever I took a drink of alcohol. Now, this is back in the days when I was young, and alcohol was my friend, and it did for me the things I couldn't do for myself. When I could drink it, and it made me feel 10 foot tall, made me Fred Astaire on the dance floor, and the world's greatest lover in the back seat of a 36 Chevrolet. This is the way I used to feel. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, I knew a new freedom and a new happiness. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, I did not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, I comprehended the word serenity and I knew peace. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, no matter how far down the scale I had gone, I could see how my experience would benefit others. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity would disappear. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, I would lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in my fellows. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, self-seeking would slip away. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, my whole attitude and outlook upon life would change. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, fear of people and of economic insecurity would leave me. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, I would intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle me. Whenever I took a drink of alcohol, I would suddenly realize that alcohol was doing for me what I could not do for myself. This is the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, the first 9 steps give me the same identical feeling that I used to get from alcohol. All my life, I've looked for that sense of ease and comfort, and I found it in alcohol for years. And eventually, alcohol turned against me and damn near destroyed me. Now, I find the same sense of ease and comfort from the first 9 steps that I used to get from alcohol. So, therefore, today, I don't need to drink alcohol in order to feel that way anymore. And you know, the beautiful thing is this. The first 9 steps have never turned against me and destroyed me. I've never been put in jail because of the first 9 steps. I've never been drug into a divorce court because of the first 9 steps. I've never vomited. Damn near did a time or two, but never really vomited by the first 9 steps. You see, this is the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now be careful when you get here. Oh God, this is great. But be careful when you get here, because you might get in trouble. You know, this is something that most of us have never experienced except when we were drinking. And these things are so new to us sober, and they are so great, that we might think that this is all there is to it. And if we do, we're going to be in difficulty. Some people will tell you that the next 3 steps are designed to maintain what you have at the end of step 9. And we really don't think that's true. In the first place, we don't believe you can maintain. There's another law of the universe that says nothing ever stays the same. Everything in our universe is either growing or it's dying. It's progressing or it's regressing. You can take a beautiful tree and you can watch it grow, and it grows and it grows and it grows and it becomes a beautiful thing. But one day it quits growing. And the day it quits growing, it begins to die. The human body is probably the most miraculous, marvelous thing that God ever created. And it grows and it grows and it grows until it's about 19 years old. And the day it quits growing, it starts dying. And all laws in the universe are applicable to everything. And any law that's applicable in the material world is also true in the mental or emotional world. The personality is the same thing. It'll grow and it'll grow and it'll grow, but the day it quits growing, it begins to die. Now, if we aren't careful, we'll stop at the end of step 9. And if we do, we'll start slipping back. And the next thing you know, we got trouble with people. And the next thing you know, we got trouble in our head. And the next thing you know, we got trouble with God. And the next thing you know, we're drinking. Bill, twice, once in his story and once in chapter 2, has mentioned a fourth dimension of existence that they never even dreamed of. The normal 3 are up here on this board behind us, but there is another dimension of human life that 99% of the people in the world have never even seen it, never even dreamed about it. You and I are the most fortunate people in the world today. We really are. Because we have a way to develop a kind of life that most people will never have the opportunity to see. If we'll take our next 3 steps, we're going to find that they're not maintenance steps, they are growth steps. And they are designed to continue this personality change. They are designed to carry me even further than these promises, and they will keep me growing spiritually for the rest of my life if I'll use them. If I don't use them, the day I stop using them is the day I start slipping back. Now, I know the word maintenance appears in the book, and we'll look at it in a few minutes. But maintenance is a word that really is not true. This building we're sitting in today, over a period of years, you can spend millions of dollars on this building. Someday, this sucker's going to fall down. Joe?
As Charlie said, this brings us to the last 3 steps. I think that, you know, sometime we will like to wind down a lot, but as he said, they are essential. They are the thing that this continuous growth in the program. I think the greatest waste of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes is not, we always say those people out there who are drinking. I think sometimes one of the greatest waste I see in Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel, is that those of us in the program is not really finding this other depth in the program. We just, so much we get to this not drinking, we hung up on that. And I think it's kind of confusing to some of the new people in Alcoholics Anonymous as we look at the AA fellowship today. I mean, you see all kind of things in AA today. You see some people happy and got that sparkle in their eye, and you see some mediocre people. And then you see some people around AA you want to buy a drink. You know, some of them really... I mean, they sat around and they took the steps 25 years ago and they've been maintaining them. And you hope he would join the Kiwanis Club or something. But it's all about the refinement of our lives. The quality comes through continuous work. And all throughout the book, Bill talks about it. Several places he mentions a fourth dimension of existence. We looked at three. We looked at the spiritual, the mental, and the physical, sociological, and then he talks about a fourth one. I think it's really unlimited. You know, there's a fourth dimension of the existence we hadn't even dreamed. And we can find that fourth dimension in these last three steps. He begins with step 10, and Charlie and I always like to mention somewhere about as we look at step 10, about how precise step 10 is. And most of us think, you know, the step 10 means this, you know, we read it up around the wall, and it means just to kind of, you know, if you hurt anybody, just, you know, make an amend. That's what step 10 means. But if we read it out of the book, we find out it's altogether different. And we find out it's very, very important, and sometime along through here we like to mention that. I think it's very, very important to kind of visualize maybe what we have done in AA to a certain extent. We get in bad habits, you know. People get in bad habits. And we got off into the bag of, we got the steps up on the wall. I see them here. They're beautiful. It's great to have the steps up on the wall. We got them on little cords. And somewhere along the line, you know, since we took the steps out of the book, people got into taking the steps. And quite naturally, by putting up on the wall, the easiest way to take them is to look up on the wall and read the step. Interpret the step as what you mean it to mean. What you think it means up on the wall, it's obvious. Read it. Interpret it as to your meaning and apply it to your life. And as a bad, you get in trouble that way. One thing, you know, there's no instructions up on the wall on how to take the steps. The only way we can take the steps, really take them, is out of the big book. Because the big book is the only book, not even 12 and 12. The big book is the only book that gives us instructions for taking the steps. We take them out of the book, we'll find out they mean altogether different than something what we think they mean. And step 10 means a lot more than just making amends for something you did. And
if I read step 10 off the wall, sitting right here, it says, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And if I interpret that, then what that means to me is that I look to see if I've been wrong, and if so, promptly admit it to another human being.
Yeah.
Now, let's see if that's what it says to do in the big book.
Okay.
Let's look at the book and see what it says.
This ought to bring us to step 10. It suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue writing any mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commit this way of living as we clean up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Okay, we have here, remember, says step 5 was the beginning. Now, step 10 says we have entered. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. To grow.
Not maintain, but to grow.
This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
What step did we do that in before? Anybody remember? Step 4, wasn't it?
Okay. When they crop up, we ask God at once to remove them.
What steps did we use for that? 6 and 7, okay.
We discuss them with someone immediately.
And what step did we use for that? 5. All right.
And we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone.
And what steps did we use for that?
8 and 9.
Now, what the book is saying to me is this. All the things that I have gained through the use of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, which were the promises, it says that's worked so well, let's continue to do that. As soon as selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear crop up, Let's stop at once. And let's run them through that inventory process in our head. I learn how to do this in step four. Resentment pops up. I say, who am I mad at? What caused it? What part of self is affected? Which old personality character defect has come to the surface? And I'll spot it every time. It's got to be a threat to one of my basic instincts alive. It's got to be selfishness, self-seeking, dishonest, fear, inconsideration. I spot it, and I say, God, you know I don't want to be this way. God, give me the strength to be the opposite. Give me the strength to get rid of this thing, and give me the strength to practice the opposite. I discuss it with someone immediately to make sure that I'm honest with me. And if I've hurt anybody in the process, I make amends quickly, and then I go on about my business. I would defy anybody in this room to work step 10 the way the book says to work it and stay the way you are. You can't do that. As you continue to look for these things, you learn more about yourself. As you ask God to take them away and try to become the opposite, you continue to change. As you discuss it with another human being, you learn more about you. And as you make your amends quickly, your relationship with the world and the people in it becomes better and better and better. This is a definite growth factor. Now, somewhere, we got the idea that you don't do step 10 until you go to bed at night. Well, at my age, I don't get in trouble in bed anymore. Very seldom. My trouble usually happens during the daytime. Now, if I get screwed up at 9:30 in the morning, why would I want to waste the rest of my day and wait till I go to bed at night to do anything about it? I can't have just one of these deals anyhow. If I get screwed up at 9:30, I'll guarantee you there'll be another problem by 11 o'clock. And another and by one, and two or three more by four, and by nighttime, I'm a basket case. Why don't I stop at 9:30 and run this little deal through, and in about 15 minutes, that thing is gone. And the rest of the day is a good day. I've spent all my lifetime that I want to in resentment, fear, anger, guilt, remorse, and etc. I don't want to be that way anymore. I love to feel good. And this gives me a way to do this. Now, when I once realized that I've got to face the most awesome responsibility that I've ever faced in my life before, now that I know how to do this, I am responsible for the way I feel. Now, by God, that's tough. I can't blame it on you anymore. I can't blame it on God anymore, and I can't blame it on them anymore. Now that I know how to get rid of this stuff and get it out of my life and keep it out of my life, if I feel that way, then I am responsible for that. Now, let's face it. Once in a while, that's the way I want to feel. But I realize when I'm feeling that way, it's because I want to feel that way. It's not because of what you did. It is me that has the responsibility to change this. And if you will use this in your life, your spirituality will continue to grow. And you'll become closer and closer and closer to God as you understand it. The spiritual sickness will become less and less and less, and the promises will continue to magnify in your life. And there's no end to this. There's no end to this. There's no point that we can say this is as spiritually as you can possibly get. See, most people don't know this. Most people are stuck with what they are. But you and I don't have to be that way. Oh, this is a new dimension of living. I never dreamed that you could change these things. I always thought that you are what you are, and you think what you think. But today I realize that isn't true. I can do whatever I want to do with me, with God's help, if I'm willing to do it. Definite growth factor. Now we have a new set of promises after you practice step 10 for a while.
Here we have another set of promises after step 10. We don't ever talk about the promises after step 10. We always talk about the ones after the first 9 steps. And I don't know, people like to get into counting them, but if they do, it's the same number of promises that come after step 10 that come after step 9, and we never mention them. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol.
By this time, sanity will have returned. Remember in step two where we said we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves will restore us to sanity. After step 10, sanity returns. And after sanity returns, you said we will be seldom interested in liquor.
Remember, insanity was the belief that we could drink. Well, now then, we don't believe that anymore.
If tempted, we will call from it like a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. Remember, we was abnormal? We will find that this happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us when, without any thought or effort on our part, it just comes. That is the miracle of it. God, that's really something. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us, neither will Cocker, we are afraid. This is our experience. This is how we act. So as long as we keep in a fit spiritual condition. Right? I just love these promises. In fact, this is what all what we were looking for. You know, really, yeah. This is what we've all been dying for. We're all in search of some way or another to do. These promises come after step 10.
You remember back in the book on page 45, it made a statement that the main object of this book is to enable us to find the power greater than ourselves, which will solve our problem. And we emphasized then that it didn't say that it would help us do it or enable us to do it, but it said which will solve our problem. Well, somewhere between 45 and 85, I woke up one morning and I said, Charlie, there's something strange in your life today. And I said, what is it? And I said, you don't want to take a drink. And I said, when was the last time you wanted to take a drink? And I couldn't remember when it was. Somewhere in this process, God removed the obsession to drink alcohol. He solved the problem for me. That's the double miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, I know me better than I know anybody else in the world. And I know that if I had to fight the obsession to drink on a daily basis, I know what I'd do. Hell, I'd get drunk. But I don't have to fight that anymore because God took that away. And in turn, he has given me the peace of mind and serenity and happiness necessary to be able to stay sober. I have been restored to sanity. Now, after 3 or 4 years of that, I began to realize I had problems in other areas of my life, too. I began to realize that I was just as obsessed with sex as I ever was with alcohol. And I began to wonder, would it work on sex? And I began to follow this same process on sex. You know, I've been restored to sanity in that area, too. And then 2 or 3 years later, I began to realize that money was killing me. And I thought, I wonder if God can handle money, too. And I took the same 12-step program, and I applied it to money, and I've been restored to sanity in that area. You see, this is a process whereby we can solve any problem we'll ever have in our lifetime if we're willing to do the work involved. It's nothing brand new. This is a design for living that really works. We've made a mistake in AA. For the last 40 years, we've been measuring success by how long have you been sober. And how long you've been sober don't have a damn thing to do with it. Now, we're not interested so much in the quality or quantity of sobriety as we are in the quality of sobriety. Are we happy in our sobriety? If not, we'll go back to drinking sure as anything. This is a design for living that lets me be restored to sanity in all areas of my life so that I can have peace of mind and serenity and happiness. Definite growth factor. Now be careful, because after you work 10 for a while and you begin to straighten out these other areas of your life in addition to your alcohol, you'll begin to think, oh my God, this is so great. There's no way that it can get any better. And if we aren't careful, we'll stop. You know, this is so new to us, we may stop right here. And we've got troubles if we do. My book says it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. Now, there is maintenance one day at a time. Sure, we can maintain this building one day at a time, but sooner or later the sucker's going to fall down. There's no such thing as permanent maintenance. We work at it one day at a time. Now, we can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Oh, isn't this great? I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him in step three, and I did it. And now they've turned around and they've given it back to me. Now that all this crap and garbage has been removed, they assume that now I can use my will like it ought to be used. And now they've given it back to me here at the end of step 10. But please notice the preciseness of the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. They gave me my will back on page 85. What did they give me back on page 84? Sanity was returned on 84. Now, they realized I'd be in a hell of a shape if I got the will back before I got the sanity back. The book is very, very precise. Joe?
Okay. As much as already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction, there's his word again,